Hello and welcome.
Hi.
8123 Podcast.
Hi.
This is a different one.
This is different.
Today our guest is Garrett Nicholson.
Hi. Welcome.
I thought it'd be fun to kind of interview Garrett about his upbringing and his just act as if he was another guest on the podcast.
So that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Feels pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Feels pretty good. Okay.
So we will get into that in a minute. But we are sitting in the studio in Arizona.
It fucking stinks. We forgot food somewhere. I don't know where it is.
We can't find it. It's hidden in the wall.
Don't know where the fuck it is. We left it from before the tour, and it is much old, and it is stinky in here. Not good smell. We're can we say what we're doing?
Sure.
John's working on some John the Ghost stuff, and
yeah,
we're just here to help a little bit.
Yeah, I played some drums on it. We got drums set up yesterday. I had some fun getting some drum sounds, and
I just been chilling, and I told him to reference a Beatles song on something. I don't know. That was about an hour ago, so I don't know where it's at now. But,
yeah.
So it's cool. It's funny. Cause actually, all the songs at some point were sent to us as a demo for us, and we never
did something with them. Yeah.
Some stuff with it. So it's fun to hear him take his own old thoughts and turn them into something different.
And it sounds different than what we would do with it, and it
totally.
You know, it's that like what I would play on the drums probably wouldn't be what I would play if it was for the main. But
well, you don't have fucking toms, so.
And I have one crash.
Yes.
Cymbal, and that's it.
You're not even playing your drums.
No.
These are not your drums.
No, this is just a fun, quick thing, you know.
Yeah.
But I am happy with. Happy with how they sound. So,
yeah.
So, what else has been going on? There was a baby shower at my house the other day.
Yes.
Have you gotten Rob Thomas?
I did. Have you gotten my seat yet?
No, I have not.
Fucking shit,
dude.
I gotta check my Amazon. It's okay. That's bullshit.
It could be at my house right now.
Could be.
I haven't been. Home and all the day. So, you saw Rob Thomas last night?
Yeah, acoustic. Fuck. I don't know.
It was good.
Yeah, he sounded great. Nice. I'm just saying, I wouldn't have gone if it was my choice.
Yeah.
Nothing against Rob Thomas, but I was fine with going after I got there. He nice. Played, I heard Smooth. I mean, I showed up late.
Yeah.
So, it's not like I sat like an hour and a half of an acoustic Rob Thomas set. It was probably like 25 minutes.
Nice.
He played 3 a.m. I heard that.
How did his acoustic sound?
Actually, that reminds me. It sounded great.
Yeah.
It was. I was like, how do you do that? Yeah. Because I don't think I've ever heard acoustic sound good live.
Not until now.
Till Robbie.
But yeah, what else? What do we have going on? We're the UK European tour is next. The Mirror, yeah. And then on Tuesday we have we're going to do like an end of the year band dinner meeting.
Yeah.
Kind of talk about the future.
Yeah.
And the past and the present. Probably more of the future.
Probably.
I
would assume so.
That's exciting.
But, I mean, time, that's pretty much what this podcast was.
Yeah. Yeah. Not about the future, about the past.
Well.
The present.
Past, present.
Oh, and future.
Maybe a little future.
That's about it. Cool. Well, we'll get into the podcast, but just before we will play a message from one of our sponsors. Here it is.
Here it is. We'll be right back.
in a podcast before?
Have I? I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. I've done interviews though. I've been on many of a podcast.
Yeah.
100 and something.
Yeah, 112.
12? That's where we're at? Mm-hmm. Is this 13?
I believe so.
Yeah.
If my calculations are correct. I know lots of things about you, and I've known you for, what is it, 15 years?
I think so, yeah. Yes, 15. 15
maybe
years
more.
Soon.
If the band's been around for almost 13, I feel like it must have been longer than that then.
I mean, I probably met you when I was 14 or 15. And
yeah,
I guess so. About to turn
30.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. But anyways, there's just tiny things that maybe just don't ever come up, you know.
Probably.
Or things that people maybe wouldn't know, you know. Because we don't really talk too much about childhood or many things on here, or like beginning to get in bands. But so you were born in Florida?
Yes.
Or yes, Florida.
I was born in Florida, Coral Springs. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was cool because Newfound Glory was from Coral Springs.
Yep.
So I was like, "Oh, I'm from the same town as them." And like I thought that was awesome. And then my cousin went to high school with Chad. And I was like, "That's fucking cool." So at one show, and they played with Finch and Thrice, I think. At this place called the I forgot what it's called. It's not there anymore. It was in Tempe. And Chad was outside. Mm-hmm. And I went up. I was like, "Hey, do you know my cousin Monique?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he was totally fucking, like, he had no idea. Yeah. So, yeah, Coral Springs.
Do you remember when we saw Jordan from Newfound Glory outside of the movie theater in Gilbert?
Kind of. It sounds familiar.
Wait,
he lived here.
Yeah.
That was totally him then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was outside of a movie theater at Gilbert, and we had just been to a different movie, and we saw him just out front talking to somebody, and we were too afraid to say anything. So then as we drove away, somebody yelled, like, "NFG rocks" or something.
That sounds about right. Yeah, that sounds, yes. It was that weird movie theater that, like, no one would go to, but we'd pass out flyers at.
Yeah. Wow. So you grew up in Florida, or you were born in Florida. Most of your childhood, you remember being in Texas as far as like being a young kid? Is that?
I mean, probably more. I mean, young kid.
Yeah.
I mean, split between here and there. Because I moved here after Florida and lived here until I was in second grade, and then I was one of those kids that came like halfway, mm-hmm. So I was just fucked. Yeah. Like, automatically, if you're like the kid that comes halfway through school, then you're just screwed.
You don't
have friends. Yeah. And their school was like up in front of ours, so like they were already doing like cursive, so I had to like catch up, like, mm-hmm. And it totally fucked me up. And so then I remember being so bummed because I had like a bunch of friends here, mm-hmm. And then I told my dad, I was like, "I don't want to live here anymore." And he's like, "Give it 2 years, and if it's not, then I'll try and find a way to get back to Arizona." And he did.
Nice.
But yeah, it totally sucked. And it was so weird. It was so weird living in Texas because all the houses there were so separate.
Yeah.
And I remember just growing up in a neighborhood, and like all my friends were the people that lived on my street. So like you'd hang out and do all that, and then living in Texas, the nearest house was like half a mile or like a mile away from ours. So it was like you couldn't like walk to your friend's house.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I remember like having like no friends when I lived there. And then when I came back, I came halfway through the year again, and it was the same thing. And it fucked me up even more because I was in a multi-age class, so I was fourth and fifth graders, and I was in fourth grade, and so like I wasn't, I did all my friends that I knew, like I had the different recess than them and stuff. So I was like thrown in this weird like thing coming back too. And yeah, it was strange.
That I didn't have any of those. You know, I've lived in the same house my entire time, but I certainly had the same. Didn't have any friends.
Yeah,
that was definitely my thing.
Yeah,
like the awkward like. Where are you going to go at lunch? Because it's like,
yes,
everybody has like a group to sit with and yeah. you just kind of like walk around and kind of look at people. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. What I ended up doing a lot is I just like wouldn't sit. So, cause then if like you sit, then you just feel weird that you're just yeah. by yourself. So I would just literally just kind of like walk around acting like I was like going somewhere, you know,
but would you eat? Or would you just not even eat?
Yeah, just depending on the day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I did the opposite. I would just sit and be like, okay. And just feel so weird and like totally being like, kind of, I mean, definitely, I talked to people, but yeah. like, and so there's people I was like semi friends, but like, they were like doing their own thing. And I just would be the guy that would like sit next to them and just like hear their conversation happen. Yeah. And you're just sitting there kind of like, all by yourself, and then they go off, and yeah. But that's like when I got really into music, so I guess it was okay.
Yeah. What was the first band, like kind of like rock band that you were into?
I guess I was always. I mean, whatever was on the radio. But like, I remember the first record I bought. Well, first thing I ever really loved was Elvis's Hound Dog. Mm-hmm. I thought that was like the coolest song. That was like the first song I remember liking. But then the first song I remember asking for the CD was Savage Garden.
Nice.
And I got that record and I remember really liking that record. And I've actually come back to that record recently. It's pretty good. but that one, but like, you mean like pop punk-ish this thing?
Or just... Yeah, like I guess like something more in alternative kind of like something that would set you on the path to wanting to be in
so
a band.
So not when I got really into Slipknot.
Probably not, because the thing is, like, Savage Garden, you know, probably didn't want to make you be in a band. It was probably yeah. something a little more underground, that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, definitely love Newfound Glory, but that wasn't the first one. What was that fucking band called? SR-71?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That I remember liking, that was like, I mean, that's kind of pop punky.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember loving that song they had. And then I was listening to Slipknot, and then I heard that song, and then I was like, I love this. And then, Trey, like, he got into middle school, so he met like a bunch of people. And so, like, he really got into Newfound, and then, like, Rufio mm-hmm. was like the first band I fucking freaked over that band. Like, that first record. Was like my fate. I would listen to it every day, all day. That Newfound Glory, and yeah, those two definitely made me want to be in a band. But that was like Napster, so like you'd find bands through that. So you could like download like Hit or Miss or something from Newfound, and then like some. I remember Sum 41 Fat. No, what was the single on the record before? Do you remember?
Oh no, I didn't. Get in, or like I didn't really hear them until they had the bigs, though.
That was when first time I heard punk, because it came up as punk. That was like what it was, the yeah. type. So I was like, this band's called punk. And then my brother was like, no, it's Sum 41. But then he like got an emo, like Save the Day and stuff. And so yeah, all that kind of happened at the same time. I was probably like
fifth or sixth grade, fifth grade.
Yeah, fifth grade. So I was like 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I was probably around the same time listening. Yeah. I mean, definitely Newfound Glory was like my
yeah
number one band.
Yeah.
I thought they were the best.
But band you've of talked all time. About it. I mean, you wanted to be in a band because of that thing you do.
Yeah.
And so did I. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was the first thing I saw that and I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just makes it so cool, and like the movie is, it's awesome. Like, it's, I watched it not that long ago.
I think we had it on the bus, like, every once in a while on this. Yeah. Like, it was on, like, HBO or something a lot on this tour, so I'd always put it on.
So then you start, you started playing bass because people wanted to start a band and they already had a guitar player? Is that?
Yeah. So Trey had a band, my brother, and so I would just go to their practice. So him and Scott would just, they would play like all day long. So I like learned how to write, not write song, but like that dynamic. Mm-hmm. Just go, I would just sit in the corner and like watch them like jam for like hours and hours. And I would do that like after school, like every day. And then I met Andrew, who used to play keyboards with us, and he played drums, and I was like, oh, cool. And he had a band, and there was another guitar player, or there was the guitar player and stuff. And so I didn't have a bass or anything, but I was like, hey, Mom, like, can I get a bass? And then she ended up buying me one. And then, so yeah, I mean, I didn't, like, I went right into, like, learning their songs. Like, not, like, learning other people's songs. I'd just be like, okay. And then, like, that's, yeah, I learned that way more than I, like, would sit down and, like, learn a Blink song or something.
Yeah. And did you instantly feel like that was what you wanted to do with your life? Or it was just, like, a fun thing to do? Because you didn't really, like, you weren't on, like, a basketball team or, like, anything like that?
No. Like I said, I would just, for a while after school and stuff, I'd just go watch my brother's stuff. And then, yeah, and then as soon as I could be in a band, I was like, awesome. And then, of course I wanted to do that as the thing, but yeah. It was like...
But you didn't really have any clue of like...
No, you're 12, you know? Like, yeah. But pretty soon, like our singer, Chris... was kind of like into the scene and stuff, the like underground punk scene in Phoenix, azpunk.net. And so he would like book shows. And so like instantly we started playing shows. Mm-hmm. Like we probably had like four songs and then played shows like right away at a laser tag place called Stratum.
Yeah. And it...
Well, my first show was a basement show. So I always thought that was cool. I could say that. My first show was a basement show.
But your first band, it like, I remember, I mean, it felt like you guys, like, had fans, but, I mean, obviously it was just, like, a bunch of your friends.
Kind of. Like, we were the first band at the school, at our school, so, like, we booked a show, and we passed out flyers, and then, like, 100 people came up.
Yeah.
But then we started playing all the time, and like, I mean, we'd bring 10 people or 20 people to a show. So there was actually people there, though, which was cool. Like,
there were times of like a battle of bands contest where you could bring like 150.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah, it was never like that all the time. It was just whenever there was like there was a battle of bands like all the time,
and you had to like really make an effort.
For some reason, people were like, "Cool," and then like. Like the jocks would come and like the girl, and you're like, why are you coming? But it was cool.
Yeah. So then I guess the Kerosene Kids was kind of your next band, and that was kind of a little more. Do you feel like from the start you guys were taking it like, you were thinking about it a little bit more like music industry-ish, like thinking about like trying to gain.
At that point, I'd already been in a band for a while, and like we'd had played shows in other places, so it felt like we were already in that headset. Like that's what we want to do. And then like our singer quit, and then that kind of formed right away into the next band, Kerosene Kids. And like that day, I remember talking to Tim. That's when I first talked to Tim, was the day that we were like, said that we were going to do it. Cause we got this guy, Zach, who was like in like the coolest, like local band. Yeah. He had quit his band and joined ours. And, so it like seemed like a huge deal. Like it was, cause you knew like Zach was like a cool guy.
Well, it was like, I guess the only way to really just describe it was just like, you know, there were all these different groups of bands. Like there was Garrett was in a band that had something going, and then Halvo and Max and like kind of that, you know, group of people that I was kind of more like associated with had a band that kind of had something going.
Similar vibe for sure. Like,
yeah. And then there was District 28, which
seemed like a big band.
Zach was this singer of, and they seemed like the biggest of all of them. Yeah. And they seemed like a real band.
Yeah, yeah.
Like everybody else felt like you were just like making it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, that was probably, I guess their songs were maybe a little bit better. They were like recorded a little bit better.
Yeah.
I think their parents, not Zach's, but like a handful of other guys were like, parents had a lot of money.
Yeah.
So they had like all the amps and like the guitar amps at like,
like in the road cases and stuff.
But it was like the same amp that like all the professional bands that we liked had, you know, whatever. And
not like the knockoffs, like.
Yeah. So, and like they looked kind of cool and whatever. Yeah, so it was like the lead singer of the biggest cool band in Arizona joined a band with you.
Yeah. And I don't know
why he did that.
Like, Ryan knew it. Well, because District 28 broke up.
Yeah. And then he was in another
like straight edge hardcore band.
Yeah.
Because he was like straight edge for like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And then, Ryan Osterman, who ended up playing with, you know, I was in bands with until, you know, the main, knew him somehow. And he like came out to us, to our practice in my parents' garage and like heard stuff. And it was good. Automatically, like right away, it was like way better than the stuff we had done before. Yeah. So, and he liked it and like, yeah, pretty much instantly. It was pretty cool. And then and then Tim.
So that was probably why Tim was even interested.
Oh, because Zach, yeah, for sure.
Zach, yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, and then
I remember him telling me, and it kind of felt to me at the time like, oh my God, it's like a super group happening or something. You know? Like I remember thinking like, oh my God, like this is gonna be big. And yeah, I mean instantly, I thought the songs were good.
Yeah.
I thought the first two songs were good.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, whoa. Like, it was one of those things, like, it's, to me, it was like, this is way better.
Yeah.
And then we played that first show, and like, and then we left, like, right away, and you guys were all pissed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what happened was, so our parents were like super supportive of the band before, and like it was, they were like, they thought we were like the best. Like imagine like a sport, like if your kid played sports and like was super, like you, they backed us super hard. And then they hadn't heard the new band, and then we went and it was like screamo, and they were like, after the show, they were so mad, and like, it was like such a bummer. And we're like,
'cause they thought it sucked.
Yeah. And we were so bummed out, and then so we just like, and I think they were kind of mad, so they were like, let's go. And so like, and I was 13 or 14 or something, and I couldn't drive, so I was like, I gotta go. Yeah. It was weird, but I remember that was the day I met Tim at the Modified,
yeah,
at the Kill Courtesy Cedar Reilly show.
Yeah.
Which was Max and Halvo's band.
My other band played that show too.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, you did.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So you were around. I just didn't see you.
I think I watched. Actually, yes, I for sure watched. And then I don't know how long after that did I join the band.
So that was probably in the fall, and then in the summer you joined.
Okay, so maybe like 6 months later or something.
Yeah. I'll never
you
forget.
You guys had only recorded 2 songs without me.
Yeah.
Right?
It was just 2. And then Andrew quit. And then Tim's like, and my brother Pat plays drums. And I was like, cool. And so you come and you learned them, and it was pretty loose.
Yeah.
And then, but you did this thing, so we had like a breakdown at the end of the song. I had this like guitar part, and you jumped up on the stool, and then like did like this like throat cutty thing. What would you call that? I know you were joking, but it was so funny, and I was like, "That's so fucking cool!" And you hit like so hard.
I guess it's like pretending that the drumstick is a knife, and yeah. you were like
cutting your throat, and then like went into it, and then I was like, "Yep, that's the guy for sure." Because you just like fucking hit so hard, and like it was awesome. And then Tony Pizzuti was like, I don't really know. Because Andrew's pretty, like, tight.
Yeah.
And you were, like, a little looser and just kind of, like, more Keith Mooney. Like, just kind of, like, bah! But I was like, that was awesome. And then we didn't find anyone else. And then I was like, we have to have Pat. And then that's how it happened.
Yeah.
So, it was probably, like, just a week or two later?
I don't feel like it was that long. I thought it was, like, 2 or 3 days later.
Oh, maybe. I don't remember. And then instantly, like,
yeah, we just started practicing right away, started hanging out every day. I would just come over to your house every day after school.
Pretty much, yeah.
And we would, yeah, we just started working on songs. And I think at that point, I don't remember my first show, but.
I don't remember either.
But. Yeah, I mean,
probably at Neckbeards.
Yeah, we started. We started to like build up a little bit of an audience, and we put out an EP, and we did an album release show, and we brought like 900 people to the show.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess not just us, but all the bands combined.
Yeah, it was wild.
And it was fucking awesome.
Yeah,
it was like, I mean, that's so many people.
I know, and especially, I mean. That room was fucking packed.
Yeah.
That was before the time of...
Yeah.
I mean, one, we didn't fucking know.
Yeah. But it was like the stage was big and stuff. So it was like a pretty legit venue.
Yeah. I mean, even if we would have done that at 900 people at Marquee, it would have been fucking awesome.
Great, yeah.
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 But... See, the thing, we had no idea. We didn't know how many people were going to go, right?
Oh, we had no idea.
No idea.
No. I mean, we had played before, you know, a couple times and probably brought like
200, maybe?
250 or something.
Maybe.
And then
But most shows, it was like 50.
Yeah. But we put together like a group of bands that.
Bless the Fall played.
Ann Arbor, I think.
Ann Arbor played. Yeah, for sure. It was pretty much any local band at the time that was like doing really well.
Yeah. And it was just like the perfect.
Yeah. It was wild. And yeah, I mean, that was fucking crazy. Yeah. Super crazy.
Yeah. So
that was the high point of that band.
Yeah. And then, so.
And then in our, the way you and me tend to do things is. All right, we did that. Let's change now.
Yeah.
Well, like, instantly.
Oh, yeah. There's this weird thing that happened, which probably... I don't know if we've ever really talked about it like this, or I've really thought about it like this, but then there's this weird thing that happened that probably changed the course of our career as a band. So, this guy who worked for the local alternative radio station in town... was like, no, never mind. That was a different story.
It was the dude from DC, or no, from Seattle.
Seattle, yeah.
The scene aesthetic dude.
Yeah, so just this.
just a guy. I know, but the way it went in our heads, it was like this guy who had a record that, like, it was like the first step into like the industry.
Yeah. So this was just a guy that had maybe a little bit of money from his parents and, said he was a record label, basically. Yeah. He wasn't really doing, you know, whatever. But to us, it was the biggest deal in the world.
Yeah.
Because there was this guy in a record label that was interested. And really, so I think he was interested in Ann Arbor, which was another band in town that Tim also worked with, and he was interested in them, and I think Tim then started pitching us to him too.
Yeah.
And he really liked Ann Arbor, and he didn't. I don't think he really liked the
screamo thing,
the heavy parts of our band or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think basically he told that to Tim, and then we kind of were like, yeah, like we're kind of over it too.
Yeah, we definitely were.
We were just sick of having to have breakdowns and whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's when we were really big into Cartel was probably one of our favorite bands
and Academy
time.
Is.
Yeah. So that really if that wouldn't have happened, there's a chance we just would have kept playing heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Because that was what was big in Arizona.
Yeah, yeah.
And we could see it becoming successful. So you could easily see a path where we would have just continued that, you know, because you saw Bust of Fall get signed and get on all these big tours and whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then we changed our band name.
Yeah, and started and we always threw the word dancey around.
Yeah.
We need a dancey part. and then, but it was
because that was Panic the Disco was getting big and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a lot of electronic kind of stuff beginning to get big.
Yeah. And so we were trying to do that. And then we got pretty sick of that pretty quick. And then we just went straight fucking chill rock. So we went from a screamo band to like wanting to be Sigur Rós.
Yeah.
Within I don't know.
And man, for people that don't know Sigur Rós, I mean, what's a more U2, but their most boring songs.
Yes. The most boring U2. Which, I love both those bands. But,
oh, yes. I'm I'm just saying what our band was doing.
Yes, 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 yes. So we just a huge just swing. And so, anyone that even somewhat liked us was the fuck is this band doing?
Yeah, it was totally, was just a different band.
And I remember really liking it.
Oh, yeah.
And then...
And at that point, it was we kind of quit playing shows, too.
Yeah. Well, because you and me got in our head that we're building a studio.
Yeah, yeah.
We're we're building a studio in your house.
Yeah.
With the worst computer ever and no knowledge whatsoever. Yeah. But, I remember, spending, hours, looking on the internet for, recording stuff, but having no idea what that stuff did or what it was for. Or
yeah.
I was I know you need a mixing console. So I looked at that and I was eight channels. You could record a whole record with 8 channels.
Yeah.
And I was $4,000. Okay. I need to save up $4,000. All right. And then, so we booked a show. So but then we kind of quit. Everyone, that band just kind of stopped and we're straight up on the, making a recording studio.
Yeah. So then, there was about an 8-month period or something where we weren't in a band at all.
Yeah.
And we had just kind of given up on the idea because, what had happened at the end of the last bands, the reason that our singer ended up quitting and stuff was that we were taking it very seriously.
Yeah.
And not everybody, some of them were older and had jobs and stuff and... We just thought, if we're going to do this, we need to, put everything we have into it.
Well, and we'd always, be dude, you're not working hard.
Yeah.
You're just hanging out with your girlfriend, dude. Come on. We got to fucking do stuff. Yeah. This is us being 15-year-olds and, telling, a 20-year-old to be dude, you just don't get it, man. You got to put everything into it.
Yeah. And, we ended up, we were right.
Yes, I know, but it's just funny, it's just funny.
Yeah.
But then, so it was you know what? We're not going to be in a band, we're going to record, start a studio. Yeah. And so that was the goal. And so we booked a Kerosene Kid show. So we brought our old band back that did really well and booked a show. And we put it on, you and me.
Did we play the show?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was our reunion. And then so we made money. We're like, okay, this is the money.
I mean, like people came. Like,
yeah,
I,
probably
I mean,
like 500 people came.
It wasn't like as big as the other one, but it was
no, it did,
big still.
It did well. And like, so we're like, okay, cool. We have like
a couple grand.
We have a little cash to like start the studio. And then it honestly felt like days later is when John told you that he wanted to start.
Yeah.
Because that was the money that we used to do the first two songs.
Yeah.
So we own those. So we should, you and me should be making all the money from those two songs. All
right, cool.
Hear that?
Yeah. I think I don't know. There's this weird thing. You know, I feel like a lot of times right when you're about to like hit on the right thing, it feels like it's all
crumbling,
you know? Yeah. And I think that's exactly what happened. You know, like we had given up on the idea of being in a band at 16 years old, you know, which is crazy.
I remember not telling anyone that we had done that. Like, I remember not even telling my girlfriend at the time that I was dating for 3 years.
You weren't in a band?
I didn't tell her about it. So yeah. I just came with the two songs and I like went to her house and I was like, hey, check these out. And then I was like, what do you think? And she's like, this is really cool. Who is this? And I was like, this is my new band. And then I did the same thing to my friends that picked me up from school the next day. And they're like, who is this? And yeah. I could tell just by the reaction that it was like, mm-hmm. That's how I knew it was good.
I did that to Kenny too. I made a fake, like a MySpace page.
Yeah.
And I sent it to him like pretending like it was just some band that I liked. And he was like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, this is my band. Yeah, that was, you know, thinking about the beginning once the main began, it was very, like, the first couple months were just weird. Like, Ryan had, we had, you know, been in bands with for a long time, but then he quit, you know, the band before. And then we kind of, like, I don't know, we kind of, like, tricked him into being in the band, like almost. I remember we, like, told him that we wanted it to be a little more, like, indie or whatever. Like I remember like we're like we wanted to be like the like honorary title.
Yeah, but when we started, that's what it
what
was
we wanted to do. Yeah.
And I mean, but he wrote all the songs.
Yeah, yeah.
So he tricked himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but well, I just we had the first couple and Tim was like, this isn't that good.
Yeah.
And then we wrote Daisy.
Yeah.
And then that was when it worked. But Daisy's pretty much a Ben Queller song.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just me, you, John and Ryan. And then we're like, oh, well, we need like a guitar player and somebody that also plays piano.
Yeah. For some reason we were like, that was the indie rock version.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're like, we need a piano player.
So he's just like, he's like, yeah, my buddy Alex. Like,
yeah.
He'll come be in the band. And it's this weird thing to even talk about now. Just like, think about it. Think about how little you know Alex.
I feel like I know him pretty well. No,
you knew
for
him
sure.
For a few months.
I know.
He was in the main.
Yeah.
Like, that's wild.
Yeah. I mean, we met him and like that day he's joined the band. We're like, oh yeah, cool.
So like literally Ryan knew a kid, I think from like some type of church camp or something, he said. And yeah.
Honestly, I fucking have no idea.
This is what's funny about this. It's like,
yeah.
You know, the
one of the roots that started this
that's been going on for 13 years, we like
barely know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's this kid that Ryan knew from church camp. He's like, yeah, he's a good guitar player. And I honestly think it was like he had good gear. Was like another thing. Like he had like a couple like, you know, nice things. Which like then it was like, well, you can't be in the band unless you have gear. You know? So he came over to my house and he played with us. I think Ryan taught him the song maybe before or something, and he came and played, and then he was in the band. And I mean,
it'd be so funny to hear like John's take on all this.
I know. I feel like he'd kind of feel the same. Like, he'd be, but like,
everything to him at that point was like, yeah, I was used to playing in that room. Yeah, I was used to playing with Ryan. I was used to playing with you. Like, like these, John, for John, it's like, here's four fucking people I don't know.
Besides me.
I mean, yeah.
He knew me well and then kind of knew you. But yeah. But I don't know. I mean, how many months was he in the band for?
Maybe three.
And did he record on those first two songs?
Yeah.
For sure?
He recorded on the EP, too.
Okay, yeah. Did you do the Akon cover? Maybe.
Yes, yeah, because we did that with the EP. But holy shit, that's weird to think about. Is like something like a song, like that song was huge for us.
Yeah.
That cover.
Yeah.
And
there's just this.
Jared and Kenny didn't play on it.
Yeah. Well, they didn't. Yeah. They didn't play on that whole first batch. Yeah.
I mean, not until Can't Stop. No, the Way We Talk.
The Way We Talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting. And I think we were just so determined to like make this band work that we were just like, sure, you're in the band. And then it was just like, think about it later. And then, you know, it ended up being like, we knew quickly that he was not going to like,
yeah,
go on tour, which was basically what the whole thing was, is that.
Yeah. I think he just had some demons too. Like,
yeah.
He was just a different person than us.
Yeah.
Like,
just wasn't going to mesh.
Yeah.
Just no matter how you.
Yeah,
I mean, I think we knew pretty quickly.
Yeah,
it was like, all right, this is a little weird.
I think I ended up getting the closest with him because he couldn't drive.
Yeah,
and I would pick him up. So I would pick him up and so we would like probably hang out the most. But I was like, yeah, you're kind of angry.
Yeah,
kind of an angry person.
I mean, John probably hung out with the guy five times.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
and like that includes like us as a group or something. Like,
yes, no. I mean, the only time he would have hung out with him would have been
like after band practice. We went to eat one night or something.
Yeah, but I mean, you and me, like, I would go to your house early though, and we'd go pick up John.
Yeah,
so like us three became close instantly.
Yeah,
and then
a weird thing to think about, you know.
Totally.
And then, you know, once Kenny and Jared joined the band instead, it was like instantly felt different.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, this is, and like from the start, it was like, all right, we're actually like,
well, Kenny came to do
to do merch for us.
But you and me kind of like secretly did that.
Yeah,
we kind of knew that. We're like, we kind of want Kenny to be in the band instead of Alex.
Yeah,
and then it was when he threw something at you.
It all worked out perfectly.
Yes. Yeah. Just fucking behind the scenes manipulating.
Yeah,
we're bad. We're bad.
Well, but yeah, it's just crazy. Do you did you when you thought back then or in the Kerosene Kids or about what it was going to be like or what type of success you were going to have with the band, did you imagine it being like this at all?
No, not at all. I mean, you can't, like, I was talking to someone yesterday about, like, not that tour isn't fun and this isn't fun, but like, it's just different than you think it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what I thought it was going to be like, but I just remember after the first tour being like, huh, that was different than I thought.
Yeah.
I had a great time, but I don't know what, I don't remember what I thought it was, but it's definitely different than you think it's going to be.
And, you know, so for the past 16, 17 years, you've been on the pursuit of being in a band.
Yeah.
What do you think, why do you think you haven't quit or gotten discouraged or kept with the same, you know, thing the whole time throughout all the ups and the downs, regardless of, you know, bands breaking up and changing and starting again and members quitting and, you know, all these things that generally cause things to just end?
I mean, so much of it's just doing it. Like, and when you're in the bad stuff, you kind of just, I don't know, you might not, I mean, you know it, but I've always felt like there's something mm-hmm. past it. Like,
because what my take on it always has been, what we've done really well is that even back then, is we always were planning the future.
Yeah.
So even when things sucked,
yeah.
you weren't like dwelling on it because yeah, yeah. you were thinking about how it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's what I was trying to say. And like, and like you and Tim have always had like some sort of vision, and I've been around it for so long and saw mm-hmm. it work so many times that like I always had faith in that.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, not that, oh, these two are going to figure it out, but like you guys are so have this extra thing that I've never met anyone else who has. And you figure some crazy shit out. And it's like, it's always felt, I'm even in fucking high, like, I've had the same feeling since talking to you before school
mm-hmm.
and being like, hey, we need to find some money to fucking do this song because of this and this and that. Mm-hmm. And like, nothing's really changed since then.
Yeah.
Like, you and me still have those conversations, like, all the fucking time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we think about things the same. You know, like here's just an example that pops in my head that shows like, you know, I think maybe people get the idea that like by now like we run things differently or that like
no.
things. So, you know, whatever. When we needed to record our first band's EP or whatever, it was like, all right. So if we like it was like a plan, like, so if we both don't eat lunch for 2 weeks,
yeah,
then we have $350.
Yeah.
And then if we work for my mom two times during the month, then we're up to $500 and we need $700, and I'm going to ask my mom if I can borrow the rest, and then we're going to do this to pay her back or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And it was just like, you'd map that out. Right.
Yeah.
And I remember, when we were writing Lovely Little Lonely, and we had always talked about, I knew that everybody in the band kind of had like a romantic idea of like going to New York to like write and to like yeah. be there to like live. So I like thought of this thing of like, and I sent an email to Tim with like a breakdown of like how it would be like the same thing. It was like, and like we could have afforded,
we're not gonna pay our mortgages for a month and then we're gonna ask mom for $200.
But it was like obviously the band could have like just afforded to pay for the trip, but
yeah.
I was like, well, all right, so if we book a show, like an underplay show for like 350 people, and the ticket is $16, and we walk away with X amount of $1,000, you know, and we can get a place to live for free for 4 days, and then we get one hotel room that we share, and then we rent out this rehearsal space that I found that I knew was X amount of dollars a night.
Yeah.
And that then we would break even and we could go to write basically without costing the band money. Because we didn't have to go, because yeah, we could have just written it home, but it was like a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
It's like, we're always like thinking of things in this, yeah. like we'll find a way.
Mm-hmm. And I think you and me have meshed so well together is because I feel like I've always had your back.
Mm-hmm.
in that. And like, yeah. I've always been like, yep, yeah, that's a great idea. Even if it's the craziest fucking yeah. thing. And I, in my head, I might be going like, that's a pretty wild thing. But it always works. Yeah. It always ends up working out. And like, yeah, I feel like that's why it's worked. Or that's why it's happened for so long. It's because yeah. there's always a wild idea. And then we've all been there to have your back and be like, yeah, that is wild, but that's yeah. fucking awesome.
And, you know, I would say, you know, for people that are trying to do something, anything, you know, that we talk to, I think, and with bands that I like help out and work with, it's just like, if I could, you know, the one thing I think we do right is that we're always looking forward.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, you know, you can sit and overthink and like, we don't do everything great, but we just keep going.
Yeah.
And then it's like, people only remember the good shit.
Yeah.
So like we've, you know, it was like our cover part two EP. Like, was that like
good at all?
Was that like something that like people are going to remember us by?
No.
No. Is it something that like brings our band down as our career? No. Because people are going to remember the good records, you know? Yeah.
Oh, totally.
And I feel like people get so caught in that of like,
for hey, sure.
Let's just do.
Yeah.
And.
Well, and I think that's kind of even where our headspace is right now. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, the more we just do, the more chances there are for it to be good.
Yep.
Or something to be good. Yep. Or something to stick
decide,
with someone.
We can decide what comes out, you know.
Totally. Yeah. But the more opportunities you have, the better chances are that something will react.
Yep.
And usually that's when something reacts in a really big way.
Yep.
Is when you're like this fucking band.
Yeah.
We were done. Yeah. We were done. And yeah. it was like, okay, hey, we're done. Oh, wait, but what? One more try? Okay. 13 years fucking later.
Yeah.
Sitting here talking about it.
So, you know, I would just say, like, for the person that has been, like, working on their one painting for 5 years, which
yeah.
lots of people that are yeah. like that, you know, for the person that's been working on their book for 10 years or...
I'm lucky enough to... I have never had that in me.
Yeah.
That, like... The sit around, like, oh, well, I'm just waiting for it to be perfect. Yeah. Like, everything that I've done that I've felt cool about, I was just like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. And also, we set artificial deadlines.
Yeah.
Like, we just say, like, the record's coming out on this date, and yeah. in order for that to happen, the record has to be done by this date.
Yeah.
So then we're forced to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we could have sat and made You Are Okay for 6 months,
mm-hmm.
but we booked out time and we made the best record we could.
Yeah.
And it's the album of the year for at least Rock Sound thought so. And like at least a couple other people.
I mean, there's probably at least five.
Yeah.
Thought it was the album of the year.
So yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe that's the story. Maybe that's your story, is to keep going. Don't overthink. And then that doesn't mean that you don't care. It just means that you're you're just progressing. So
tight.
Well, that's the episode.
That's the story of me.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, homies.